WOLB.
Shop Talk with Cassandra Renee, the radio show where we talk about it all.
Hey, welcome to Shop Talk with Cassandra Renee. With me are my co-hosts, Kevin Eaton.
Good morning, Baltimore and beyond.
Angelo Superstar Barbara Richardson.
Good morning.
And Dr. Lisa.
Good morning, Baltimore.
Hey, team. Welcome to 10 a.m.
All righty then.
How do you all feel?
I don't know.
I think I'm half asleep.
I feel like I'm going to a job for real.
I'm pumped.
Yeah. Oh, you're pumped?
I'm pumped.
I feel like I'm clocking in.
You know, we're not used to that, are we, Kevin?
We're not used to rush hour traffic.
Rush hour traffic, exactly. Because we're sort of like semi-retired. Unemployed.
It's different.
Because 695 was a nightmare.
OMG.
Yes, it was. You know, because I left my house about 8:45. I figured, oh, that's enough time to get me there. And I didn't get here until like a little after, like 9:35 or something like that.
Right. Yep.
So I guess we'll have to start leaving, what, at 8?
A little earlier, by 8 o'clock, yeah.
Oh, my
gosh. You know how
gosh.
We do it. We are live all the time.
Always live. Yeah. Rain, snow, sleet, or hell.
Yeah, we are here, live and in color.
High water, we are here.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, Baltimore.
Yes, and for those of you who've never heard
never
our voices
heard our
before,
voices before this
we
time in the morning.
Are Shop Talk with Cassandra Renee, and the premise of our show is we talk about conversations that take place in beauty salons and barbershops. Mm-hmm. Angelo Superstar Barber. He is a famous barber, and I am a local stylist.
Okay.
But, you know, we talk about a little bit about everything, you know, because our little tagline is a radio show where we talk about it all. Mm-hmm. But we mainly focus on relationships, right?
Yes.
And health. And when I say health, I mean mental and physical health. You know, it just seems like our shows always go back to that in some form or fashion, okay? So if you want to strengthen your relationships, whether it's with your spouse, significant other, your children, your mama, your daddy, your coworker, hey, you're going to want to tune in at 10 a.m. Every Monday.
Mm-hmm. And even with yourself.
Excellent. Because so many of us are in denial. And some things you don't even see within yourself, you know? So you may need to be enlightened. Okay?
Yes.
And that kind of brings me to the topic of our show today. Because we are here to enlighten you. Please open up your minds because, you know, information is power. You don't have to subscribe to it. But open up your minds, okay?
Right.
This is part two of conversations with a sex therapist and surrogates.
Surrogates.
Yes.
You know, I didn't know what a surrogate was a month ago. I mean, I thought a surrogate was a woman who carried a baby for another woman.
Me too.
Me too.
That's what I thought it was.
Too. I did.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've been educated as to what a surrogate is. And, why don't I just go to line one so we can talk to Dr. K and
Dr.
Tara?
K, okay.
Okay. Hello, Dr. K and Tara.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
We're across the map from you. We're in San Francisco.
Yes, it's 7 a.m. there or 7:06.
Okay.
So I know.
It has been raining.
Oh, it has. Wow. It was raining yesterday when I talked to you.
Yep, that's what we're talking about. Rain, rain, rain.
Oh, my gosh. It beats snow any day to me, you know?
Anytime.
You know, I was thinking, I said, we're complaining about having to get up at 8 and be here at 10. They're up at 7. Well, probably had to be up earlier than that, right, to prepare for the show.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Dr. Susan Kay, she's actually a PhD. Sex therapist, educator, intimacy coach, surrogate partner therapist and trainer, and tantra practitioner. Tell us a little bit more about you, Dr. Susan Kay.
Well, I don't know what you want to know, but we're here in San Francisco presenting at the Institute for Advanced Studies of Human Sexuality, and we're hoping that to get the word out about our new Institute for Mind Body Therapy, which means we're going to be training folks in three categories. One is for therapists to learn how to work with body work people. So therapists doing neck up therapy and body work therapists doing neck down therapy. as well as surrogate partners. So we're going to have three certifications within our new institute. So we're out here talking to students and therapists and letting folks know that this is what we're now offering.
Okay. You know, because a lot of people don't stop and think that sexual inadequacy is more prevalent than we think. You know, a lot of times we don't want to think about it. We don't want to talk about it. It's such a taboo, you know, but in learning more about yourself, mm-hmm. like what Dr. Lisa said, and learning, I guess, some coping skills and different things like that, it helps you to get in touch with more of your sensual side. There are so many people who are 40-year-old virgins because they've been traumatized at a young age, you know, mm-hmm. or because they were outcasts and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So what Dr. K's group, what they do is they kind of help people who are struggling in that respect. You know, so, you know, there's help with your, there's help with mind, body, and soul. Where? You know, so just open up your minds and just kind of just take on the information that we're sharing with you. I'd like to also introduce you to Tara Livingston. Hi, Tara.
Good morning, Cassandra.
Okay, so you have been actually a surrogate for, what, nearly 30 years?
Nearly 30 years, that's right.
Okay,
that's
right. Tell us a little bit more about you.
Well, I had always had a heart to help people. I always wanted to serve needs of people. I started as a social worker, actually, and I ran a program for the elderly in Los Angeles and the disabled. I did that for many years, and then I had the opportunity to take the surrogate training, and I thought that this was even a more intensive way of being able to help people on a one-to-one basis. And I was drawn to it. It was almost like a calling. And it's emotionally intimate work. And it's very deep and it's very moving to know that you can really help change someone's life so that they can be happier and more fulfilled.
That's excellent. We have on hold Mr. Andrew Hartman. Hi, Andrew.
Good morning, Cassandra, and good morning, Baltimore.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm not awake yet.
That's understandable. Neither are we. Thank you so much for agreeing to participate in the show today.
Yeah, halfway through the night, California time.
Oh, it is? Sorry. You know, I was just looking over your bio. And you're very, very interesting because just to kind of go back, I actually purchased the movie The Sessions, and it was actually based on one of your mentors, Andrew. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. With Dr. Cheryl Cohen Green?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So how did you meet her?
Well, let me just mention about how I got interested in being a surrogate.
Okay.
You know, I've always felt most alive in the context of intimate relationships, always having, you know, parties at college where people got really vulnerable and started telling things they've never told each other before. Mm. And then I had a girlfriend who was in the process of going through, or not a girlfriend, a friend, who was in the process of going through a divorce. And she wanted to understand how she had gone from an idealistic 19-year-old planning on marrying for life to be on the verge of divorce at age 24. So she was reading all these books about relationships, and she asked me to read them too so that we could talk about them and that, you know, I could help her kind of figure this out. And that's how I've started to see relationship as a profound tool for personal growth and transformation. And so then it was in 2008, it was probably about 2006, I found out about this work of using surrogate partner therapy to help people explore issues of intimacy, sexuality, and intimate relationships. And so I took the training from IPSA, the International Professional Surrogates Association, in 2008. And Cheryl was also a member, and she was one of my mentors. She was my mentor on my first case, and I got to know her back then.
Okay. And just to let our listeners know, in case they haven't seen the movie, The Sessions is a movie starring Helen Hunt and John Hawkes, a paralyzed and confined gentleman who is confined to an iron lung since childhood. He's a poet. He was a journalist. And at the age of 38, he faces his biggest obstacle, which was losing his virginity. A sex therapist, a surrogate, and a priest helped him with his personal journey.
Yeah, and some people got the impression from the movie that surrogate partner therapy is intended for predominantly disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
And although it is sometimes used in that capacity, statistically, only about 10% of clients are those who are physically disabled. It's generally more often used for people who have challenges with relationships, with sexual functioning, with fear or anxiety, or with past trauma.
Wow. And I noticed in your bio, you said people told you that they feel safe around you.
Yeah, that's right. I've always been the sort of person that people end up saying, well, I've never told anyone this before, but this feels like the right time to say it.
Okay. And you list the reasons why, right? You are present. You listen, you're non-judgmental, empowering, and you are available.
And that's really the foundation of the work as I see it, especially with female clients, because with female clients, the relationship, the connection, and the context of safety and acceptance is really important, especially because many female clients have had some background of a trauma or abuse,
mm-hmm.
and also come to relationships sometimes with a feeling of feeling disempowered. So it's really important to overcome that, to create a sense of empowerment, to give, to help them realize the choice and the agency that they have, and to, you know, get comfortable with negotiating boundaries and saying no, and recognizing, you know, their ability to say no and stand up for themselves, and to find a way that works for themselves as well as the people they're interacting with.
And I'd just like to piggyback on what Andrew has said. The Sessions is a very moving film, and I really recommend it for everyone. It's extremely enlightening. But there, for me, part of the portrayal was a little bit inaccurate.
Okay, and this is Dr. K speaking, correct?
No, this is Tara.
Oh, it's Tara speaking. Okay.
Many people think that surrogate partner therapy takes place in six sessions, since that's what is portrayed in the movie. And it typically takes much longer than that. It's more intense. There's far more involvement on the part of the therapist. So surrogate partner therapy could go on for 6 months. It could be a year. And it could be longer than that. So that was slightly misleading. The other thing, too, is that for male clients, you know, it's very, very difficult for a man to reach out for help. Women are socialized to be relationship people and to be peacemakers and to interact and to have relationships, whether it's with women or with men. But, you know, when the old boys get together, they talk about sports and baseball and things that are not very personal or supportive of each other. And so for a female surrogate, the challenge, of course, in the beginning is always helping a client feel safe, providing a supportive environment, and letting, if you will, their feminine side come out, letting them really breathe and get to know what an emotion is. It's okay to have an emotion. It's okay to cry. It's okay to sob. It's okay to feel anxious and not in control all the time. And to put themselves in a place where they're learning. And many men also have been, they have sexual dysfunction, which dramatically undercuts their self-confidence. So they may be great in the boardroom, but they're lacking in the bedroom. And it really cuts through very painfully. So both men and women, you know, bring their issues to the table.
Okay, and Andrew, you have a perspective on the movie The Sessions as well. I know one being the lack of the involvement of the therapist, which Tara mentioned.
Yeah, that's correct. And another one is that, you know, the stated objective of the client in the movie was simply to lose his virginity. Well, in reality, losing a virginity is not a good reason to be doing surrogate partner therapy. Because celibacy and virginity are legitimate lifestyle choices. And so that's not necessarily a problem. But what often happens is that people are involuntary celibates, which means that they're not having the type of sexual connections that they want to have because there's something that's preventing them from having those connections. It might be extreme fear or anxiety. It might be a lack of social skills, a lack of knowing how to connect with someone. And so basically in surrogate partner therapy, we look at whatever is preventing them from having the connections that they want to have. And we help them develop that skill and confidence that they need to do that on their own. So the virginity is the symptom. The virginity is not the problem. Mm-hmm. And we address the problems first, and then we see what happens.
Okay. Because you seem to have an opinion about the pacing of the movie and the focus.
Oh, yeah. So that also, you know, in the movie, they're actually showing the surrogate and the client, you know, attempting to have intercourse in the second session.
Right.
And in reality, you know, surrogate partner therapy is never about throwing someone in bed with a sexual partner, because that sort of behavior is what's caused some of the challenges that we work with. Mm-hmm. In reality, we need to create a context of safety. We need to get to know each other, and we need to have an environment that supports opening up emotionally before the physical. And you know, as what was shown in the second session in the movie is where I might be in session number 10 or 12, for example. So it's really a slow, gradual process of first establishing safety and trust, getting to know each other, doing work with relaxation, communication, overcoming anxiety, doing everything that needs to be put in place before the sexual comfort can blossom.
Okay. Dr. K, do you have anything to add about, I guess, your perspective on the sessions?
Yes, it certainly was good portrayal of someone that needed to have a certain goal met. In our work, we feel that the socialization skills training and those pieces of teaching folks and giving them opportunity to experience those things that they missed maybe through high school and even college, the sessions, they didn't go into that because John Hawkes, I forget his stage name, but John Hawkes wasn't going to need socialization skills training. He wasn't going to be out dating necessarily or going to places to meet people like dances or cocktail parties, which is a huge piece of what we teach. In fact, my dissertation, my study was to prove that the socialization skills were more important than the actual sexual piece. Statistically, 80% of my 151 males that were studied completed the socialization skills and went on to meet partners of their choice. just 67% of my participants needed to complete the sexual piece, which once the client is able to be sexual with the surrogate, their therapy is ended. 1, 2, maybe 3 times with a surrogate partner sexually, and then they are handed back to the therapist to continue if they still need help in any of the emotional or social pieces to continue to date and meet an appropriate partner.
Have you discharged clients that have had to come back to you for additional sessions?
Discharge them as a therapist?
As a therapist, yeah. So, you know, the surrogate has, you know, done his or her part, you know, and then you've said, okay, you're fine. You can go out and, you know, date. You're okay. I'll discharge you. And then they've had to come back to you at a later time.
I can't recall anyone that came back.
Okay.
Of course, we work with people from all over the world, really. So sometimes we refer them to a surrogate in their location. To a therapist in their location.
Mm-hmm.
But what came to mind instantly when you said that, I did have a couple come back, actually, and the surrogate and I were invited to their wedding. Because they came back for couples counseling before they were married. He had told her and his family the entire story. He was a 67-year-old male, actually. And so they came back for couples counseling going into a marriage, and we both went to their wedding. It was quite sweet.
Okay. Kevin.
Do you graduate your clients or have some sort of completion when you're done?
You mean like a ceremony?
Yeah, something like that. You know, like, you've completed this session. Here's your certificate.
Certificate of completion.
You're good. Yeah, you know, I mean.
Yeah. No, not really.
So it's not, it's not a thing of completion. Okay. Do you advertise?
Sure. Yeah, what we call closure in the therapeutic world, but not completion. Yeah.
A closure. Okay. Do you advertise anywhere?
As a therapist, I do, yes.
You advertise your institute? You say you have an institute?
Yeah, well, we're working on our website. It's just about ready to go.
Okay.
So we have a website going up, but I personally have two sites that I market through, and I'm on Psychology Today, where I get a good portion of my clients come through there.
Okay. One thing I was curious to know, maybe Dr. K, you probably already knew the answer to this question, but I want to also ask Andrew and Tara, when you guys were kids, what did you want to be when you grew up? Because, you know, a lot of kids say they want to be a fireman, a doctor. Like Dr. K, you might want to be a doctor when you were a kid, but I can't see a kid in the third grade saying, well, I want to go to the IPSA and become a surrogate therapist. And what changed your mind from that little kid to being where you are now?
No, good question.
I wanted to be a ballerina.
Ballerina, oh. Okay. You want to be a ballerina. Okay. I mean, yeah, here we go. Okay.
And I studied dance for many years,
mm-hmm.
And I studied theater, but I really wanted to see myself twirling around the stage with a ballet company. But when I was 10 years old and my girlfriends on the block and I were all starting to have our menstrual periods, I had been taught about menstruation, all about it, by my mother, who was very progressive. And so one night I remember very clearly my 6 girlfriends and I were sitting on the curb, and someone mentioned the word bleeding. They'd been bleeding, and they didn't know what that meant. And so I proceeded to give my Sermon on the Mount about menstruation, talking about it in detail. And at the end of my session, my girlfriends all concluded that I was born to be a sex educator.
Hmm. Okay.
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 All right. Andrew?
Well, when I was very young, I wanted to be a stuntman.
Hmm.
Okay.
I was always going out and jumping off my garage roof.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can deal with that. Mm-hmm. So what happened in your life to change your mind from being a stuntman to being a therapist or surgeon?
Well, there was a step in between because as I got into high school, I found out I was good at math and computers, so I got trained I got a degree in information sciences, and I worked as a software engineer for quite a few years before becoming a surrogate.
Okay.
And probably what led me into the surrogate partner therapy is it was in 1999, I did a workshop by an organization called the Human Awareness Institute, or HAI for short, H-A-I. And they offer these workshops in love, intimacy, and sexuality. And I took one, and it was in one of these workshops that one of my friends told me of her intention to become a surrogate. And I didn't know what that was, but it always kind of stuck in the back of my mind until I started to consider it more seriously a few years later.
Okay.
I tell you, on the other side of the break, we will be opening up the phone line. So if you have any questions for Dr. K, Tara, or Andrew, you can give us a call at 410-481-1010 or 1-877-704-1010.
Mm-hmm.
We are back.
What?
Yeah, that was a quick break, wasn't
it? Used to this.
Yeah, this is fun.
Loving every minute of it.
We're still here.
That's right. Dr.
Started
Lisa.
From the bottom, now we're here.
Yes, I had a question for Dr. Susan. With more individuals coming out of the closet in terms of their true sexual orientation, does that change the dynamics of your programs or how you approach sex therapy, especially with same-sex couples? You were talking earlier about, men, the way they view relationships as differently as women do. Does this change your approach to the sessions?
Not really. Everyone has male-female qualities within them. And so we speak to the same kinds of needs to get in touch with those parts of ourselves, and how do we balance them in certain situations, or live the continuum of one day we feel more male, we might be out mowing the yard, and the next day we feel more female because nurturing a child. So we're always looking at how to have healthy, balanced male-female energy in no matter what your orientation. However, within inside our new institute, we do have a gay male surrogate who is trained and is going to be holding a separate page within the context of our website for gay men. And we have women who are trained who will work with women and will also work with transsexuals, people transitioning from male to female or female to male. So we've got everybody covered because we think, yeah, is there some tweaking? Of course. But mostly, we're all pretty much the same when it boils down.
So it sounds like in your sessions is not so much the focus is not the other person, but yourself becoming comfortable with what you are and how you relate to other people, because all your relationships are an extension of you.
Exactly. And I believe you were the one that said in the beginning, your relationship with yourself. And that's absolutely where it starts. What's your relationship with you from the neck down? And then how do you share that?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Angelo.
I just wanted to know from last week, what is your process for working with people who have touch issues?
Mm. Well, we start very slowly. We have the team approach. I have three teams that I'm running right now, one in Philadelphia, one in San Antonio, one in Austin. And on those teams, I have nurses, I have a doctor, I have people who teach mindfulness to get you out of your head. We have just hands-on massage therapists. We have tantra people who teach more about their male-female energies and how we can identify and work with those within ourselves. So if we have someone who's been traumatized, right, more so than the next person, they might start with mindfulness training, like how to quiet those thoughts of fears and anxieties. Or I might send them to my nurse, who is also a tantra practitioner and a mindfulness certified practitioner, and she can help with medications. So we start very slowly and work our way up to, if they need the deeper work of surrogacy, their hand has been held along the way.
Right. Okay. And also, have you refused to ever work with a client, and for what reason?
I tell all my clients at intake, or potential clients, that we do an intake session where I get to learn more about them, they get to learn more about me and this work, and we decide together if we are a therapeutic match. I tell them there's going to be homework, and the only people that we cannot work with are those who are not on the court with us as much as we're on the court for them. They cannot be in the grandstands watching us hit the tennis ball back and forth to each other, being the only one in their court.
Right.
They have to be on the court with us, and if people don't do their homework and they're thinking we have a magic wand that's going to take care of their past or their anxieties, they need to be on the court with us, and if they're not, then we're not the right match.
Dr. Right. Susan, does that include sexual offenders?
Not so much. Not that I haven't worked with offenders in maybe other capacities. Sexual offenders need other kinds of attention. Now, I have worked with sex offenders in getting them in group settings where I've been called into agencies and have run programs on positive touch and had them start to understand, because a lot of sex offenders have been offended. So we're working with a dual diagnosis of abuse and offending. So we need to get them back to some roots of what is positive touch, appropriate touch, and teaching them what it means to have gentle touch.
Right.
So it is a bit different with offenders.
Do you find that most of your clients suffer from some sort of abuse?
No.
Okay.
Not most. I wouldn't say most.
Okay. Well, what percentage would you say?
30 to 40%.
Okay. What factors do you think plays the biggest role in sexual inadequacies?
Today, I think it's the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And pornography. And that, not that I'm against pornography, but in saying what shapes how we do our sexuality. In the internet, we've had folks who, in the past, without the internet, were shy, had a lack of training around social skills, maybe had some religious trainings that had them be fearful to step into the dating world. And those folks in the old days would force themselves to ask a girl a dance or ask a girl out or find a way to get past their anxieties. And if they didn't, they would end up going through high school and even college without dating and would be on our doorstep. Today, those folks can sit on the internet and get some kind of interaction, some kind of gratification that doesn't so much encourage or force them to interact and connect emotionally. So that's a large group we're seeing. The other factor is the pornography is because we don't get sex education in our homes. we're not taught about emotional relationships and connections in our schools. We're taught the plumbing, basically. Folks get their early messages from how a man is supposed to perform and how a woman is supposed to react or also perform from pornography. And so those folks need to be retrained or come to us because their social anxieties and their first experiences, sometimes a lot of premature ejaculation issues because they're in the back seat of a car or someone's coming home, or they think that they're supposed to last for an hour like the porn folks are able to do. So we have to debunk myths and help them find out what is natural for you. I don't let people use the word normal in my office because there is no normal. But what is natural for you is what we need to learn and work from.
Do you believe that masturbation is natural, or would you call that normal? And is that hurtful or more harmful in trying to relate to other people?
Well, again, that's a whole show to talk about self-pleasuring. We, of course, in our culture have the desire to take away our desire. And our desire is with us in uterine. Baby boys have erections. Fetus boys have erections. Fetus girls have lubricate. So it is inborn. It's innate in us. And that everybody goes through puberty and everybody goes through the urges and the desires to self-pleasure. We didn't create that or invent that. It comes from whoever you believe or hold to be our designer or creator.
Creator, right. Angela.
My next question was, how does being a sex surrogate affect your own sex drive with your own partner?
Tara and Andrew, we'll take you first.
Okay, well, actually, first, I'd like to mention that title, sex surrogate, and I'm a little uncomfortable with it. I prefer the term surrogate partner.
Right.
I mean, imagine if you had a professional chef who was trained and experienced in preparing a whole bunch of appetizers and entrees and also spent about 15% of his time making pastries. I'm sure you would agree that it would be misleading to call that guy a pastry chef.
Right.
Right? Because having the name pastry in the title makes you think that that's the focus of the work, whereas in reality he just prepares pastries because that's part of the big picture of what he does. And it's kind of the same way with what I do. I think it would be similarly misleading to call me a sex surrogate when in reality only about 15% of the time that I spend with clients is doing things that you might call sexual. You know, in general it's more about partnering in the different aspects of relationship, which include relaxation, communication, getting comfortable with touch, building trust, intimacy, all aspects of relationship. And sexuality is sometimes included because it's an aspect of relationship.
Right. Okay, but initially the term was sex surrogate, and the name has changed over the years. And Dr. K, I'd like to ask you this question, then we'll have Andrew answer Angelo's question. What brought about this change, Dr. K?
Well, we did. Yeah, we did. As you said, in the 60s when M&J, Masters and Johnson trained women to be substitute partners, then substitute wives, okay? Tara wanted me to say substitute wives. Then the IPSA organization began in the 70s, so it was then called sex surrogate. When the 80s hit and the AIDS epidemic came on board and we became a more litigious, fearful culture, surrogates dropped off. And the resurgent now in late 90s, early 2000s, is that we wanted to change the scape of how we were identified and recognized. So it just started to be surrogate partner therapy, SPT is now the appropriate term. Just like we don't say STDs anymore. We say STIs. So it's a changing field that we're always growing and coming up with terms that feel more appropriate for the times that we live in.
Okay. Angela, would you remind us of your question, please, for Andrew?
I just wanted to know how it affected your personal sex life, your work.
Well, I've been in a long-term relationship that started even before I became a surrogate partner. Right. When I was on my first date with my sweetie 7.5 years ago, I told her of my intention to become a surrogate. And I thought that she would kind of run away and never want to see me again. But instead, she started telling me all the reasons why she thought, from her perspective, that I would be good at it. And so as a result, we've been together ever since. And so my profession has not interfered with our sex life. In fact, I think that the skills that I've learned and the way that I've been practiced at interacting with people has actually really supported our relationship.
Okay. And Tara, you touched on it a little bit last week because you've been in a long-term relationship.
Yes, I've been in a 16-year relationship. And so when I met my partner, I told him about my work, and he came to understand the value of what I was doing and how I was touching people's lives and the reality of what the process is, that it is not about, nor does it revolve around sexuality, although sexuality is there. But it is about the building blocks of relationship and the process of a person getting to know themselves, which is the most enlightened journey that you can take. And through better understanding, he came to accept that. And I think we have been able to create better communication between each other. We can speak more openly. Certainly, I would say listen non-defensively, and these are all skills that we teach with our clients. So it has certainly enriched our lives. And I, being a little bit older than Andrew, my partner and I have also gone through our life changes. And so we've been able to adapt to that, I would say, more gracefully because of my knowledge of relaxation, sensuality as opposed to sexuality, and sometimes the warm embrace of cuddling. So it's been very enriching.
Okay. Kevin?
Cuzzo, you know me, it's like this. I love the Shop Talk with Cassandra Renee show. I don't care what time it come on and how long it's on, okay? And since we've been on, we've had some confessions up in here, right?
Oh, is it time for a true confession?
Confession time. Ooh, now, okay?
Yeah.
When I moved to California, like in 87, the early 90s, I was involved with the escort service.
Okay?
Truthfully, okay?
And you heard it right here, Baltimore.
Right? Okay. You heard it here first.
And basically what we did was clients would call, and we would actually drive the females to the client's house.
Okay.
And these clients were rich.
Ooh.
You hear me? I'm talking about Malibu. I'm talking about Santa Barbara. I'm talking about rich people. And I found out that these people were calling the same girls back to back after about a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talked to them, they would say, you know, you'd be surprised how these guys that we see really don't want a lot of sex.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are so, I guess, so far out of circulation with people that they're like in a world of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And just to spend time with somebody like Pretty Woman, you know, that
yes.
You spent time, you know, that's what they do. So they was telling me that through the escort, I mean, they do the sex thing,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of time that they spend with these guys, they say it's not even about sex. Them guys
you just sit and talk.
Yes. So, my question to the surrogates, what is the difference between what you guys do in, let's say, Pretty Woman, being the escort, besides it being against the law?
Well, the difference is in the intention of the work and the process and structure of the work. The intention of an escort is to make money, to book as many clients in an evening or a day as she can. And so the aim is a financial aim. The surrogate's aim is healing, is helping a person create relationships, helping them develop their knowledge of themselves. And surrogates work under the umbrella of a licensed psychotherapist. So the triadic model is extremely important in the work that we do. So the surrogate is always talking to the therapist to the client, and the client to the surrogate. So it is very structured, and we take our guidance from the therapist. And there is a very specific learning process. Andrew has gone through a very specific learning and training process, and I went through another learning and training process as well. Mm-hmm. So you can't just hang out a shingle and say, I'm a surrogate because I decided to call myself that one day, mm-hmm. Nor can you work on your own. You must be within the confines of the triadic model.
Okay, you are listening to Shop Talk with Cassandra and Renee.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin?
Okay, well, I just want to thank y'all for being here because I'm loving it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that lack of intimacy is on the rise?
Well, certainly there is an epidemic of sexless marriages.
Hmm.
Stomp on Tova, but there's also the way that we communicate with each other these days has become more and more disconnected.
Right.
With
yes.
people interacting with each other via email and text, mm-hmm. and, you know, at home alone, basically sending words over the internet. And that has led, in many cases, to a lack mm-hmm. of emotional and social skills that sometimes need to be overcome to actually meet with someone in person.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think the issue of isolation is really rampant.
Yes.
Because people sit in their rooms and they talk into a box,
mm-hmm.
and they don't really need to go through the emotion of interacting with another human being. They're in their rooms. There's tremendous isolation, a cut off from the rest of society, and then there is the influence of pornography. So I think in that sense, the computer has not been helpful to the overall growth of people in the context of relationship and emotional intimacy.
But you mentioned that one of the main reasons, though, for the lack of intimacy in a group of people that you see it in is mostly sexless marriages. I mean, so there is another individual with those people. So why do you think that it's sexless marriages? Why do you think that's on the rise?
Well, that's probably better answered by Dr. Kay, because, of
okay.
course, there's only work with unpartnered individuals.
Right.
So I would turn that over to her.
Dr. Kay?
We're busy. We've got both parents working or both people working. We've got kids, cats, and dogs. And life is busy. And they just say, we don't have time. And we call it the nurture maintenance syndrome. When folks get married, they're 100 folks are dating, it's 100% nurturing. You know, everything is about me and you, us. And maintenance, they have none. There's nothing to maintain. So they get married, they have an apartment, maybe a dog. So now it's like 80% nurturing, 20% maintenance. You see where I'm going, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they get a house and a couple of kids, it's 20% nurturing, 80% maintenance. Mm-hmm. And when you show my office, it's 0% nurturing and 100% maintenance.
Okay, Dr. Lisa.
Just a comment and a question, but the comment is working in the field of applied psychology and rehabilitation counseling, the data has shown that with the rise of the internet online, there is a degression in social skills. And I, like you said, without the social skills, there will be intimacy problems. You'll see a more growing number in that area. But my question is to, when we're talking about the late virgin 38, 40, what about those individuals who have experienced sex at a much younger age, like 9 and 10?
Mm-hmm.
What does that impact have on your sessions and your approach to therapy?
That goes back along with what we would call sexual abuse. And so we walk very slowly with those people. We start with, some of them can't even be touched. And so we do energy work, which means you don't particularly lay hands on, yet you just work within their energy field, and that's kind of their emotional field as well, where they get to feel safe with you. And then the mindfulness training and having the nurses and doctors on board. So it's a very slow process of putting people into their bodies with positive messages, because they got negative messages that need to be overcome and exchange the positive ones.
What if the both of the partners were the same age? Children having sexual experience at 9, 10,
right. Yeah, which is very common. It depends on the reaction of people that find them. It's general the reaction. You know, in quote, third world countries, the kids run around, they have sex play, and folks make no bones about it. It's normal, natural growth and development. Here in our culture, if we find out about childhood sex play, the reaction can be very damaging.
Okay. Typically, what is your exit plan with your clients?
With a surrogate client?
Yeah, the surrogate, Tara or Andrew.
So I'll address that. So first, there's an understanding right from the beginning of the process that the relationship is going to be temporary.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to make sure that that's understood right from the beginning, so that there's no unrealistic expectations that we're going to walk into the sunset and be together forever. And then we also remain very focused on what the goals are, and there's an understanding that whenever we reach these goals, we're going to terminate. And so then as we're going through the process, I, as a surrogate, am always monitoring how are we doing with respect to the stated goals, and then we come to a point in the therapy where I start to begin the transition away from the intimacy and toward termination. And that is not the end of the work. That's actually an important part of the work, because the benefit of surrogate partner therapy is that clients get experience with every step of relationship, including the ending. You know, we've all had relationships that end, and all relationships will end in one way or another. And if someone has the experience that relationships can be ended with respect and gratitude, then they no longer have that fear of termination that may even prevent them from starting the relationship in the first place.
Okay. Andrew, thank you so much. I have special announcements. The first one is, ta-da! Dr. K will be joining us every third Monday of the month. Okay.
Right.
So she will be in enlightening us. Okay? So we'll have a different subject matter each time.
Okay.
Next week, we will be on, in honor of Black History Month, we will be saluting someone in our history. Also, we're going to have a medical doctor educating us about diseases that plague our community. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of interesting shows coming up. So thank you all, Dr. K, Tara, Andrew. Thank you so much
for
participating in the show.
Thank you.
So until next Monday at 10 a.m. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all. 10 o'clock.
Bye, Baltimore.